And I'm going to explain why here just in a second. Because in order to really dive into this next section of this message series that we're calling Old School, we're going to have to work together here, and we're going to have a little fun competition here in just a second. But calling this series Old School, First Testament Faith. And we've been spending a lot of time up until the last few weeks in the New Testament, in the stories about Jesus and the stories about the Christian church forming and all those great things that the New Testament brings. But we don't want to miss out on the rich heritage that the New Testament inherited that comes from what we often call the Old Testament. But really, maybe a little bit more, a term that maybe shows a little more value, maybe a little bit more respect. You know, oh, that's the Old Testament, is the First Testament. I remember hearing that once years ago. I'm like, oh, I like that. I like that. That kind of has a nice ring to it. So we're exploring different pockets, different episodes, different stories of First Testament faith. And the New Testament very often tips its hat to its predecessors, the First Testament. In fact, I mean, Jesus is always quoting. I mean, he hardly ever says anything without quoting that First Testament. That was the Scriptures. That was God's revelation to the church at that time. And so when they looked for God's Word, they looked to those 39 books of the Hebrew Bible. And so, and right in the middle of the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews, it says this about those heroes of old. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. And the whole New Testament is prioritizing our faith in God is what he's looking for and what really counts in our walk with him. And this is what the ancients were commended for. This is why we tell those stories. This is why they made their mark on history, because of the way they trusted God. In many cases, the way they gave their lives for God's work. And that chapter wraps up with this paragraph. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and I've been reading this paragraph every Sunday in the series, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. So since we've got this incredible record of what it looks like to trust God in these incredible, exciting, miraculous, amazing stories that cover centuries of sacred history, let's get to know those. Let's really kind of dive in and make sure we're familiar with these examples of faith, because when we are, and when we run up against roadblocks in our own lives, it just makes it easier to pull and be reminded and inspired that others have gone before us. And as we've been talking about every week, I mean, these have been ordinary, flawed, messed up individuals, families, tribes, kingdoms that God has still hung in there with and given opportunities for just a little bit of faith. And when people have taken that opportunity and trusted God even a little bit, great things have happened. Well, many of us are familiar with those, you know, classic stories of Abraham and Noah and Moses and some of the big names. It's been fun to explore what I've been calling the B-sides of, you know, maybe not the big number one hits. And remember, and we talked about this, I think, the first week, is those vinyl record things. Remember how singles used to come out back in the, you know, they would release, and the popular song was on the A side, but then a little bit more of an obscure song was on the B side. And those are some of the gems. Those are some of the treasures. Favorite Zeppelin song ever was only released, I was telling some friends recently, we were at a Zeppelin cover band concert. Zeppelin, awesome. All female Zeppelin cover band. Favorite Zeppelin song ever was released only on a B-side. There's some trivia for you that you're going to have to catch me at refreshments later to find out which one I'm talking about. So trying to go a little bit on, you know, maybe you haven't heard of these characters. They don't get that much media, that much press. First Sunday, we looked at Gideon and the incredible story of somebody who, on the surface of things, looked very cowardly. Yet God looked at him and saw an amazing warrior if he would just trust God. And the way God led Gideon in an army of measly 300 up against the Midianites, who had 135,000 strong. And Gideon didn't even have to draw a sword to be able to run them off. And then last week we looked at the book of Esther, and Esther and Mordecai, and how a little orphan girl named Esther had a whole, if you have Jewish friends and family that celebrate the Feast of Purim every year in late winter, early spring, February, March, it's because of a little orphan girl who somehow rose to the top in the Persian kingdom, a little Jewish orphan girl that God set up and put in a certain place in just the right timing, and that if she trusted him, was able to save her people, and has been commemorated for centuries because of her act of courage. And so we've been finding these little stories tucked away. In Judges, remember Joshua, Judges, Ruth is the way to find them. We looked at Esther last week. You know, the first testament, these 39 books, they start off with the first five books of Moses, often called the Pentateuch, the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And then those historical books that tell so much of the story about Israel became Israel. And then you've got the poetic writings. The story of Job is this incredible drama. It's really written like a play, and Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. I'm not going to mention Song of Solomon because the kids might hear it. Okay, so Hebrew boys weren't allowed to read this stuff. It was just too rated R. And most of the Old Testament is at least R, bordering on more than that. But this was basically erotic poetry. And if we're separated by all the hints and things like that from their culture. But if you know what you're looking for and you kind of grew up in that, you would say, okay, this is honeymoon material, you know, and so the Bible is full of an amazing variety of literary genres. That being one, I think everybody slightly woke up there, so that can work. Okay. You get the major prophets, which aren't any more important than the minor prophets. The major prophets just more material than the minor prophets. And so we are going to zero in some of the historical writings. And so a good way to remember this, most everybody's heard of King David. Although when we did that David series, it was nice to know that some of those stories were heard for the first time. David is pretty much right smack in the middle of these historical books. He shows up right around the end of 1 Samuel. And then you start to get the different kings. So in 1 and 2 Kings, kind of the theme of what's going on in Israel is the various kings of Israel now turn their backs on God. They are doing their own thing. They are really committing evil in God's eyes. And you've got a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom, and they're getting themselves into all sorts of trouble. However, I came to realize at a little family gathering the other night that it can be very confusing, because we played a little Bible trivia, me and my nephews and nieces, and I realized that sometimes, it can be kind of confusing to understand the difference between two of the major players in those stories, and two of the major prophets that would advise the king. And you were usually on the run because the kings didn't want to hear what the prophets had to say, were Elijah and Elisha. And I want to zone in today on Elisha, but to make sure you guys really understand who Elijah and Elisha were, we're gonna play a little Bible trivia. Okay, so that you could have a visual of an Elijah and Elisha. Most everybody's pretty. You Google Elijah, this is the most famous Elijah you'll get. Is Elijah Wood, who's most known for playing Frodo in Lord of the Rings, right? And so you can kind of lock onto him as, you know, when you picture Elijah. And then, of course, everybody recognizes Elisha Otis from... Anybody ever been stuck in an elevator? Okay, you have been stuck in an elevator. Okay. But you survived, and you've got Elisha Otis to thank for that, because Elisha Otis is responsible for inventing the little thingamajigger in an elevator shaft that, if an elevator breaks or gets stuck, doesn't plummet to the bottom and everybody dies. And so, way to go, Elisha Otis. And so, that's who that is. So, the most famous Elisha on the internet when you Google images and Elisha. So okay. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to play Neighborhood Church West against Neighborhood Church East. Okay? And so, flip a coin. We'll give it to West to go first. Okay? And so, we're going to play. Now, you guys, the other side of the aisle has a chance to steal. You guys can come up with the right answer. You guys get to powwow a little bit. Yep. And so, but you only get one try, one answer, and then you guys can steal, but then you guys get the next question, all right? So you guys ready to play a little Elijah or Elisha? Okay, here we go. Here's the first question to Neighborhood Church West. Who made an iron axe head float up to the water's surface? Well, you got a 50-50 chance. So, these two prophets were famous, so they had some of the most amazing miracle stories in the whole Bible, even. Okay, so you just get a few seconds, throw out a stab. Who just goes Magneto on this iron? Who? What? Say it. Didn't hear it. Elijah is wrong, and so I didn't really see that Simeon doesn't really going to work when there's only two answers. So never mind. All right, so you guys didn't get a point, and so. Is the answer. Okay. All right. So you get, okay, still tied at zero here. All right. So next question. Who was kept, these are all so easy. Okay. Who was kept alive by ravens bringing him food? And so, is that the answer? Elijah? All right. Good. Just want to make sure everybody got the whole Flacco, quarterback of the Ravens. Okay. So, all right. Good. I just want to make sure. So, okay. Elijah is correct. So Neighborhood East is in the lead with 1 point. And so, okay. In honor. Okay. So you guys have heard of the evil Queen Jezebel, right? She is in charge. She's married to King Ahab during this time in 1st and 2nd Kings. And she is constantly being upset and trying to get back at both. Well, she's like the prime, like, evil player in this time in history. And so, any games? I heard Games of Thrones is kicking off tonight. So, raise your hand if you're a Games of Thrones fan. Oh, I got to admit it in church. I'm just joking. And so, she's pretty bad, right?
Yes.
I mean, she's pretty bad, right? Okay, so Queen Jezebel was the worst. Okay, so who was despised by Queen Jezebel? Elijah or Elisha? No, back to West. Okay, if you pass, how about if you pass, you can let them steal, but then they lose a point if they don't get it. No, if they pass, and you guys try to guess and they get the wrong answer, then you lose a point.
Oh, what? Oh, what? 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 What?
making this up as I go. All right. Wes, you take too long. Okay. You guys going to pass or take it?
I'm going to go Elijah.
Elijah. Okay. It was kind of a trick question. It was both of them are like pursued by Jezebel. I know. I'm kind of being a little hard on Wes there. Don't worry. And so, all right. Next question. Next question. Okay. Who held a contest to see whose God was really real? Elijah or Elisha? That's one of my favorite far sides right there. God's on a game show. He's getting every single question right, you know, and poor other guy. But that's really, that's how the contest ended up, if you read that story in Kings. Okay.
So is it a trick question?
This, none of them are really trick questions. Look how much you're learning through all this. Oh. Wow, neighborhoodies. Okay, all right. Back to West. The points double now, okay? And so, give you a chance to... All right. Who is taken up to heaven in a chariot of fire? This is where that famous phrase, chariots of fire, comes from. Oh, and it's a tie. Neighborhood West ties it up at two. And so, pretty impressive. Okay, next question. Who caused an entire village's water supply that it was nobody could drink from to be cleansed? Favorite Simpsons character, Blinky the Three-Eyed Fish. Do you have a guess?
I have
two.
Oh, I'm impressed. Neighborhoodies. Okay. Here we're. And so. Oh, you guys. Yeah, you guys are at four. Four to two. Okay, but we're still. Okay. For two more points. Who tricked an entire army? I mean, this is one of the best Jedi mind tricks that ever occurs. Who tricks an entire army into being captured without even a fight? What's the answer? Elisha?
Yes.
Ooh, it's so close. Tied up again. Okay, so. Okay, this last one goes to everybody. All right, it's just the first answer. Okay, so lightning round. So we're tied up, and so you just gotta shout it out. All right, here we go. Who brought a boy back to life from death? You guys get my whole, you know, career, child actor, career resurrected metaphor thing going on? Okay. All right. What do we got? Elijah? The correct answer, once again, is both. And it's a tie. Everybody ties. I love it. So both of them had raised boys, dead child, back to life. Elijah and Elisha. Okay, so now that we've got a little more familiarity with really the two most powerful prophets in the history of the First Testament, I want to zone in on a story that just speaks a lot, I think, even though it's so ancient and almost mythical, that it has so much that speaks to us today. And so you find it in 2 Kings chapter 6, where Elisha really breaks a cycle of violence that is problematic all through the history of Israel. In fact, it's hard to find an Old Testament story that isn't somehow connected to some sort of battle or some sort of violent story, because that culture was so caught up in just trying to stay protected, trying to survive with enemies all around. So here we go. Now, the king of Aram was at war with Israel. Everybody wanted a piece of Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, I will set up my camp in such and such place. It was a conversation that he would have with his officers. Let's do this. However, the man of God, and that was a nickname, that would have been a good trivia one too. That was a nickname for both Elijah and Elisha, the man of God, sent word to the king of Israel, beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there. So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the kingdom so that he was on his guard in such places. So every time the enemy king would come up with a plan, Elisha would know about it and would inform the king of Israel. And Israel was staying safe. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded, hey, there's a mole in our group. I hadn't, until I found this picture of, had anybody, that's what moles look like? Moles are just not the cutest little, I mean, it's like, I don't like, man, I feel bad like showing that. And that's just one of God's uglier creatures right there. And so, geez, you know, I'm sure he's got a good heart. You know, and then they've got the whole stigma of being like a double agent or a spy, you know, kind of that thing. But anyway, so the king of Aram is trying to figure out, okay, there must be a mole here, because every time we come up with a plan, Israel is onto us. How are they doing that? And these guys are all shaken, and they're all, it's not none of us, my lord the king, said one of his officers. But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, basically has our palace wiretapped. I mean, the war room seems to be wired. Everything we talk about, he somehow finds out about. The king of Israel, it's like the very words you speak in your bedroom, he is aware of. The Simpsons just has the best. On any time, I like the FBI one the best. Yeah, you know, sitting outside Marge's window. Okay, so the king of Aram is just irate here. Go, find out where he is, the king ordered, so I can send men and capture him. So let's take care of the first order of business. Let's get Elisha out of the way so we can get this invasion going. So the report came back in. He's in Dothan, all right? He sent horses and chariots and a strong force to Dothan. They went by night and had the city surrounded. Now when the servant of the man of God, and the servant of the man of God in both Elijah and Elisha's life always plays an interesting, he's always an interesting sidekick, just throwing that in there. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. Oh no, my lord, what shall we do? The servant asked. And then as cool as a cucumber, Elisha looks around and goes, don't be afraid. The prophet answered, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. But his servant's looking around and says, well, nobody's with us. Who are you even talking about? Where is it? It's just us. And Elisha prayed, open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see. Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked, and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. And he was able to see what Elisha was able to see, the angels of the Lord that truly surrounded the city and surrounded this foreign army. This is where the fun really begins. As the enemy came down toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, strike this army with blindness. So God struck them with blindness, as Elisha had asked. And Elisha told them, and George Lucas subsequently ripped off one of the best lines ever. Where's Nick? He needs to hear this. And so Elisha just tells him, these are not the droids you are looking for. This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you are looking for. And he basically, whether he blinded them physically, emotionally, somehow hypnotized the whole, he just Jedi mind tricks a whole regiment that's out to get him and leads them along a different path. And he led them to Samaria. Now Samaria is, we're in the kingdom that came to be known as the northern kingdom of Israel, because the two kingdoms after King Solomon had a bit of a civil war and split north and south. So you've got kings in the north and kings in the south, and they were always two separate kingdoms ever after that. And it's the southern kingdom that became known as the kingdom of Judah, as the Jews. And that's why in the New Testament there's always this tension between the Samaritans in the north and the Jews in the south. That's why when we would run up in all those New Testament stories, all those prejudices, even just very racist happenings that happened because the Jews in the south felt like the Samaritans in the north, their capital was Samaria, kind of sold out and embraced other foreign cultures when the southern kingdom was trying to keep things pure. And so that's all the roots of all those tensions are forming in this part of history. So he leads them basically to the capital city of the kingdom. Led them to Samaria. And after they entered the city, Elisha said, Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see. Then the Lord opened their eyes and they looked, and oh crap. There they were inside, a completely well-fortified capital of a whole kingdom. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, shall I kill them, my father? And for one, this is one of the very rare instances that one of the prophets gets that little sign of respect, that my father term. Usually the prophets are being hunted down. But Elisha does the king such a favor here. Shall I kill them? He's just looking for a green light here, because you know what the king of Israel wants to do, but Elisha holds him off. Do not kill them, he answered. Would you kill those you have captured with your own sword or bow? The king's probably going, yeah, I would. Here's what Elisha wants him to do. Set food and water before them, so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master. So he prepared a great feast for them. And after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. So the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. So this amazing story that starts off with invasion and an appetite to devour another people. And if the king of Israel had his way, would be met with as much force and violence to match the onslaught that was coming. But Elisha, who puts himself in the way, sees a bigger picture and thinks more long term, and uses the power that God has resourced him with and gifted him with in order to create a long-term, a very rare, but real long-term peace between two warring peoples. And I think there's several amazing truths that come out of the story that encourage us today and inspire us. And the first one is to realize that God has each of us surrounded. Even when we might feel like everything's falling apart, that the onslaught of life and stress and worry and fear and all those things are surrounding and invading us, that God's presence surrounds everything. And we are protected. And just like Elisha says, don't be afraid. Those who are with us are way more powerful than those who are against us. And the New Testament echoes this in one of John's letters where he says, you, dear children, are from God and have overcome them, and the them is those forces of evil out in the world that are pressing in, that are tempting, that are hurting, that are invading, whether physically or emotionally or spiritually, because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. But oftentimes we don't see that. Just like Elisha's servant looked at him and said, are you kidding me? And Elisha had to open his eyes and show him what he was seeing. You know, and it's one more reason why we need other people walking in our lives that are close to us, that sometimes when we just feel blinded to God's presence in our lives, somebody can put their arm around our shoulder and say, hey, have you forgotten who's looking out for you? And pray that the eyes of our hearts open up. Because it's really easy to get our blinders on. And it's easy, especially when we go it alone and we're just kind of seeing what we all the we're seeing, and we forget who God is, how big He is. And we need at least one other voice, several other voices in our life. And you know how I'm always encouraging everybody needs to be in a small group where we can share what the problems and, you know, the foes that we feel we're up against, you know, what we're seeing, and people can remind us that isn't what you have to see. That isn't God's reality. Live in God's reality, not the one that you've created for yourself. But the second point here, really, especially amidst all these stories of fighting all through the Old Testament, what we see really is that our fight is not against people or anything like that, but really it's a fight for peace. But oftentimes it takes a fight, just as much energy that you've got to conjure up, you know, that to go into battle for something. Sometimes we have to be proactive for peace. But I love the way Elisha looks for an opportunity to create peace instead of an easy setup. I mean, he could have easily ended the war right there. He took a chance. He took a gamble, hoping that this would send a message to this foreign country that don't go up against the kingdom of Israel. These are a people that are doing their best sometimes to follow God, and God's going to be looking out for them. So you're wasting your time. He could have just slaughtered them right there, sent a pretty good message. You know, Elisha was not the perfect, you know, Elijah and Elisha both had their times of their flaws. Early in day one in Elisha's ministry, so the story goes that Elijah, his mentor, was caught up one day. God said, look, you're getting an e-ticket ride straight to heaven. Do not pass go. I'm going to send you a special ride. And this chariot of fire just scoops him up from heaven and takes him away, and everybody sees it. And so Elijah, you know, this is a good Bible trivia for you, is one of two people that never experienced a physical death in the Bible. Who's the other one? Catch me a refresher. And so Elisha is there, and he's left now to take over Elijah's ministry. Well, he's strolling on his way home, and a bunch of hooligans who saw the famous master Elijah get caught up in heaven start making fun of Elisha's receding hairline. So this is a lesson. Never make fun of a guy's receding hairline, right? It's just because Elisha turns around and just throws down a curse on these young hooligans. He's a little immature in the beginning of his, you know, the early days of his ministry. And all of a sudden, two she-bears, it's funny, the two mama bears come out of the woods and wipe out 40 of these young gang. And so you know, that's the story. It's often kind of, oh, is that a good use of a prophet's power? I mean, he lost his temper there. You know, it was like, I mean, he could have taken the high road and said, you know what, kids, you know, sticks and stones, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, but the bears came crashing in. And so, but you see, as Elisha matures, you see how he starts to see a big picture. And all these stories of bringing peace. But he takes a gamble. And it's a gamble that we're called to take. And the Apostle Paul stresses this. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. It'd be so easy to do. Eye for an eye. Tooth for a tooth. But the New Testament turns that on its head. But that didn't even start in the New Testament. That has its seeds in the First Testament, in the Proverbs and Psalms and stories like this. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, okay, I know your friends are doing this, but you're not doing this. How many times have we had that talk with, for those of us that are parents with our kids? As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. But that can be so hard to do when everyone else is playing by different rules. But our calling is to play by these rules because, and this is what we see in the story, grace breaks cycles. Grace breaks the cycle. And the bands of Aram stop. The cycle of violence was broken that day because Elisha took that gamble of showing grace and sending the message back to this king that we spared your army. So let's call things good. And that message made a change. The Apostle Peter echoes the Apostle Paul's words, do not repay evil with evil. On the contrary, repay evil. And he's really getting this from Jesus, with blessing. Just like Elisha blessed this army with a feast. Because to this you were called. This is who you are as children of God. This is what the kingdom of God stands for. So that you may inherit a blessing. And a blessing came to the kingdom of Israel right away because of the peace that ensued after that. I want to tell you a little story real quick in my own life of a blessing that started off in almost a fight. And your old pal Rick almost had to mix it up against somebody who was, you know, more than twice my size. Okay, this is a back fence. Okay, the nice thing is this was years ago. So no one knew these neighbors. Okay, so I'm going to tell a little story here. So, these trees were severely overgrown. And we were well within our rights to just go trim the trees. You know, anything that's still growing in, onto your property line, you can trim them back to the fence line and do whatever you want. I thought it was a nice, you know, courtesy to give a heads up. And I left a message for our neighbors that I didn't know very well at all, but looked them up in our little neighborhood directory, left a little voicemail. Hey, you know, we want to talk to you about the trees that are growing from your side of the fence. We need to do a little tree trimming. Technically, well within our own rights, technically, those trees are growing in an easement, and they really don't belong to anybody. Our property line falls short of that line, their property line. It's a little complicated. But still, wanted to be the good neighbor and do all that. My message was horribly misinterpreted. The next thing I know, the guy, let's call him Bob, shows up at our house. I'm not there, and just berates. I mean, who berates such a wonderful, sweet, you know, doe-eyed, you know, and just like is. And I get home, and Denise is practically in tears. because, you know, he just lost his thinking that we're just going to chop all these trees down. I was trying to explain to him that we were just going to do a little trimming, and he just wasn't listening. So I'm irate. I mean, it's like nobody talks to my wife like that, you know, and I'm marching, and that's all. And Denise says, no, don't go, you know, she's like, you know, trying to get me to calm down. And I'm like, no, that is so uncool to act like that. And I've just lost, so I'm trudging around the loop, and I'm coming up with my mental plan of not only the verbal abuse that's going to ensue, and I know this guy's a big guy, and I know he's got a big town, you know, because, you know, when you're neighbors with people, you especially right next door, you hear different things and all that. So I'm trying to think, well, if I can just get in one, you know, because I know if I come on strong, he's going to come on strong. And I'm just kind of playing this chess match in my head. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. So I, you know, it's like, I'm just like, well, what the hell is that guy's name anyway? And then all of a sudden, it's like God says, well, his name is, and I'm changing the name, his name is Bob. But it's in a way that the tone is, and I like Bob the same way I like you. Bob's my child too. Let's take a different approach, please. I mean, that all just came in the word Bob. I mean, it was like, and I'm just like, you know, I mean, almost like if you watch me, it just, I mean, it, like, you know, I went, you know, I could feel the slowing down. I don't want to do this. I'm always having to do this. I'm always having to, like, be a pastor and be a nice Christian and all that. And it's like, this is my opportunity, just like, finally, you know, God got all the reason behind. I've got nobody that I know would feel I wasn't justified to just lose it here. But by the time I got to that doorstep, here's what came out of my mouth. Was, you know, he opens the door. And he, you know, recognizes me. You know, and there's kind of a tension. And he doesn't know my name. I know he doesn't know my name. But as soon as I said, hey, Bob. He knows my name. And he doesn't appear to be mad. And I said, I hear there's a little misunderstanding or concern about the whole tree thing. And then all of a sudden, physically, just kind of, I just remember this whole, I'm so sorry what I said to your wife. And he just is apologizing all over himself. And the tree thing not only worked out fine and was no big deal, we struck up a friendship that, you know, years later when we had some other tree issues that involved other neighbors, we were, you know, we were so tight and on the same page. You know, they moved away, but it's kind of funny, they traded houses with family members. So every once in a while we see them back. Kind of a quirky story, and it's great, and it's this wonderful friendship that could have taken another turn. God stopped me in my tracks that day and showed me something, that grace, offering grace, can break a cycle of anger, of violence, of resentment. And that's what I love, this story of Elisha. That's what I love these words in 1 Peter, because I inherited a blessing that day. A blessing of friendship with a neighbor that is so valuable and wonderful to have. Let me say a little prayer as Keith comes back up with the band.